After Hurricane Katrina in 2005, so many people rose up to do good things for the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. In my hometown, a warehouse was set up to receive donations of clothing, and many groups were involved in setting this up. But one rose to the top as outstanding volunteers and organizers, and they became the gatekeepers of the entire operation. They were a faithful group of women of a prayer circle at a local church. Now, many of the warehouse volunteers, hundreds of them, had been working tirelessly day and night, and they warned the organizers that the facility was at capacity and that really we shouldn't take any more donations because there wasn't anywhere to put it. But this was throwing down the gauntlet for these ladies, and they took this challenge, and it emboldened them to never say no, and they kept taking donations and boxes and crates of clothing. They directed others to stack the toddler clothes over here and the men's t-shirts over here and the size 7 shoes over here. And they put everything against walls and on top of each other, and it was a sea of boxes. The day swiftly came in which a convoy of trucks arrived to transport the clothes to the people of New Orleans. And all the volunteers that had been working so hard came out to see the culmination of their sweat and tears. 3 semi-trucks lined up at the loading dock as the head prayer lady ordered the door to be opened so that a waiting team could load the trucks. But nothing happened. So, again, this time in a stronger tone, she yelled, "Raise the door!" A faint voice could be heard inside saying, "We can't find it!" In their zeal to take every single donation that was offered, they had accidentally ordered volunteers to cover up the loading dock door, I kid you not, with a 12-foot wall of boxes. Their good intentions, their unwillingness to say no to more donations had literally created a stumbling block for the rest of the work to be done. Such is the similar fate of our dear Apostle Peter, the rock turned stumbling block. Last week, our brave, devoted Peter was the first one to speak up for Jesus, making him the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And he's given the keys to the kingdom. And then a few sentences later, he's completely sideways with Jesus. Our gospel passage starts with a clear turning point for us to pay attention to from this time on, which means that from now on, it's about to get real, people. Jesus has been traveling. He's been teaching the masses. Think Sermon on the Mount. And now he focuses inward on his small band of brothers and sisters, his disciples, because the tide is turning. Jesus is focusing his attention on the completion of his ministry, and before that, the cross, and he needs his followers to do the same. He needs them to know that he must face suffering and death. This is way too much for Peter. I can imagine him going, "Whoa, time out. Nobody ever mentioned suffering when we were out fishing. Did anybody hear Jesus say that? I was under the impression that we were following this guy because this movement is about love and justice and equality." But Jesus is letting the disciples in on the rest of the story, that to work for love and justice and equality is not necessarily easy. Peter wants to spare Jesus the hard part and shield him from the pain, but Jesus explains that this temptation to take the easy way out is something that Satan, the deceiver, would cook up. There's also some personal apprehension there with Peter. He's not sure he can go through this suffering and pain himself. Like reluctant Moses in our reading today from Exodus, Peter feels inadequate to handle the really hard things that lie ahead. To really do this work that Jesus is teaching them that must be done, the disciples must be prepared to take on an empire and walk a road that is hard and face humiliation and alienation and pain. Jesus uses the phrase, take up your cross, an image that is central to the iconography of Christianity, right? But at this point in our story, Jesus hasn't been crucified, so what does the cross mean here? Everyone in first century Roman occupied Palestine would have been way familiar with what a cross meant. The overlords, the occupiers, the empire that imposed stiff taxes and strict laws was fond of making examples out of criminals by using extremely harsh tactics such as crucifixion. It was a horrifying punishment that involved the sentenced to carry their own instrument of death through a jeering crowd and be fastened to it and left to die. Anyone would have shuddered at the mere idea of a cross. So Jesus uses this illustration, this poignant illustration, to explain that following him is going to be incredibly difficult. Now, the cross here doesn't necessarily only mean literal death. It also represents the rule of an unjust empire. To take up a cross means going against the grain and breaking unjust rules to follow the ideals of a new way to live with love, justice, and equality. And although this might have led to death, it most assuredly would have led to a rocky road full of stumbling blocks and hardships. Things like the surrender of pride and ego and comfort, things like that Peter and most of us, let's face it, would rather step around than through or on top of. Being a Christian in first or second century Palestine would have been challenging, but just is the case of being a Christian in our world today. It might not lead to crucifixion, but at the very least, it can lead to discomfort at some point, of attending to things that would be so much easier to just ignore. I got an email this week from a neighbor who asked our congregation to pray for the California Air National Guard as they were being deployed to Houston for search and rescue. I can't help but think of those folks climbing into a plane, heavy with gear, leaving their families to fly thousands of miles away to help people they'd never met in an incredible mess left by Hurricane Harvey. But I get that desire to help other human beings, and I get that it can be strong because our hearts are the hearts of heroes more often than not. And I thought about this week when I contemplated the phrase, take up your cross. And I know that those folks are making a huge sacrifice for humanity's sake. But we don't all have the opportunity to put on that gear and get in that plane and go on that rescue mission. There is, I believe, work right here that in some ways is even harder because it's harder to see. I think there are stumbling blocks that are tempting to circumvent, stumbling blocks that get in the way of following Jesus. These barriers are in our everyday lives, ways in which we must speak up for those without voice, for those who are marginalized by hurtful manifestos, stumbling blocks that involve enacting love, justice, and equality. Ideas we are quick to embrace on Facebook, But on our daily road, it's so much easier to step over them. And it's not because we're evil. Neither was Peter. It's just easier for us to accept the loving Jesus and the healing Jesus and his exemplary ethical ideals. It's harder to face the reality of the cross because it hurts. It might hurt to give up ourselves for our others. It might hurt to let someone else go first as we choose to be last. It might hurt to face down empires of the world that stand in the way of God's kingdom. Discipleship is messy. And it doesn't always come with an apron and gloves, does it? It gets under our fingernails. It gets in our hair. It's going to rip a hole in our favorite metaphorical jeans. But you know this. You've been there. You've been fighting the good fight. But even our brave, beloved Apostle Peter was tempted to turn around and go home. But he didn't. He put on his big boy boots and he just kept on slugging because he knew that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And so do all of us. From the tips of our toes that are down in life's mud to the top of our heads that are looking out for life's rocks on our path that won't trip us up, but give us a better vantage point to see God's kingdom. Amen.